Hi, I'm Adrian. And right this moment, there are tens of thousands of Black entrepreneurs around the world creating amazing startups that you've never heard about. For some reason, the mainstream media doesn't cover Black entrepreneurs as much as it should. But on this show, we find these amazing founders. We sit down with them. We figure out how they got their ideas launched, what their struggles were, what they're afraid of, what drives them. My hope is that you have enough firepower from listening to this show to go out there and start your own business. Or if you're working on something, continue plowing through it. Let's have an amazing time together. Welcome to the show.
How's everything going?
Good. I'm wrapping up a accelerator program that's for elder tech. So next week is our pitch event. And then I've been writing a NSF grant application. So I just have all these things going on.
Elder tech. Wow. Okay. That's a whole nother category in itself.
It is. Yeah. Because I did a health tech accelerator. And I mean, of course, that's focused on all areas of health and all ages, but it was really great to see an accelerator that was focused primarily with the demographic that I'm focused on and in technology, you know, for assisting them to age in place.
So with this accelerator, do you get funding for it? Did you have to give up equity?
No, I just paid for it out of my pocket. So it was, you know, I didn't have to give up any equity or anything like that. I just had to pay to participate in the courses.
Did you prefer that, or would you rather have gone to an accelerator where you can actually give up some of your company and then actually get some funded, some seed money?
I have never done that. I have done a few accelerators through my, from New Mexico State University where I graduated, and they didn't require me to give up any equity. I've applied to Y Combinator, but I was not accepted. So I haven't really reached out to those other accelerators.
Is that something that you plan on doing? Are you comfortable with giving up parts of your company for some seed money?
Oh, I would be. I've been reaching out to venture capital investors via Gust to see if I can get some pre-seed money. But it has been very difficult to raise funding. I'm so heavy in research and development, the type of sensors and system that I'm developing, that with even the working prototype I have, since I don't have the traction that investors are looking for, it's really hard for me to secure the funding that I need in order to really be able to scale this.
So I looked at your LinkedIn profile, and on there you have your pitch deck for your company. I believe the name is Omnis Technology.
Correct.
Okay. So the first thing that jumps out to me is that you're doing hardware, right? Which is in 2019 is extremely hard to do. Like, I mean, software is decently hard, but hardware is even harder. So I guess the question would be, you know, why this technology, and you know, how did this product come about?
Okay, well, the issue is that we have an increasing demographic in regards to people aging. And there's a huge movement for people to age in place. So they want to stay in their homes as long as possible. See, once you age, to fall. And here in New Mexico, our falls are to the point where people aren't found for, on average, about 13 hours if they live alone. And with every hour that passes, it actually can lead to an earlier death. So I wanted to bridge that gap between the time of the fall to the time that you could get the assistance you need. So originally, I was going to make an app that could go onto a Samsung or an iOS, like an iWatch. So it'd be a wearable device and an application. And Apple's already doing this with their newest product. So I knew that it's very important. But originally I did an accelerator program and participated in an iCorps, where basically I was able to go out and talk to a lot of seniors, So I asked them a lot of questions and did some customer discovery about wearables. And I would ask, well, are you using Life Alert? And they were like, oh yeah, I've got Life Alert. It's in my desk. I don't use it. There's a disparity about the, you know, having to wear something. It makes them feel old. So they didn't want to really utilize wearable devices. And they definitely had an aversion to utilizing smartwatches that would have to interact with smartphones. And so the biggest issue that I discovered when it came to hardware was the battery. How was I going to charge this device? So I pivoted and I started looking into alternate approaches. So I looked into things that they could wear, such as their everyday things like socks or a shirt, something that, you know, they wouldn't really think about as being a wearable, but it would be able to track the fall. And that hasn't really come as far along. There are a few companies out there that are doing some smart clothing, but there was nothing out there. And I wanted to use available technology, because with available technology, I could keep the cost lower to the consumer. So I waited. And then finally, what has came out is called a millimeter wave radar sensor. And with this radar sensor, a few companies are making it. And you could see very small and minute movements, and it can interact with Internet of Things. So there's this evolution that's coming along with these radar chips. So I started looking into this more, identified a chipset that I really wanted to start working with, and started basing my system primarily off of this radar sensor. So it's available. I didn't have to make it from scratch. Eventually I may, but right now I have a really good chipset that I can work with. So that's kind of the evolution of the technology, the hardware behind it. But as you said, it's very capital intensive, and I've just been self-funding it. So it's been quite an adventure.
So bootstrapping a hardware company is something that you don't hear about every day. And it's obviously we've established that it's a hard thing to do. But one of the things in the startup world is that, you know, you always hear about people solving their own problems, and there have there's this deep motivation, this deep pain that you've had or something that you understand that sort of drives you to solve that problem. Is there something that was personal about this for you? You know, did you have a family member that went through something that, you know, you realized, oh, wow, this is actually a really big problem? Or were you just exposed to the business opportunity side of things of it?
Well, I have a political science background. And so I always look at things kind of from the demographics and the higher level issues that we face as society. I created this as an ongoing project while I was getting my master's at Boston U. And originally it was sort of smart home-like. On a personal level, my father has had heart attacks and he lives on his own. But he hasn't gotten to the point where he started falling. But I've always known that, you know, falling and the issues of wanting to age in place was something, there were implications surrounding that as a society that we have to confront. Because there's just not enough caregivers to currently care for all the people who are about to get into, you know, these demographics and into these age brackets where they're going to fall more. So I think it's just my desire to do something on a global scale and to look at things and to know that, you know, it's important to have our elders around as long as possible to get those stories, to get that understanding of your roots. And that's always been something that's been a part of me, and my mother and father always, you know, really emphasized about it's important to give back where you come from. And it's important to be able to keep, you know, our grandmothers, our grandfathers, our fathers, mothers around with us as long as they can. And, you know, I think about it, you know, kind of on the personal level as well, because, you know, what if this happens to me? You know, how would I feel if, you know, I fall, I don't have anyone to call, I have no way to get up, and I feel helpless. You know, that's just, you just don't want to have anybody really experience that, I think. So that's primarily, I think, my motivation. It's to really ensure that, you know, we keep our elders here, and we get those stories from them, we get an understanding of who we are, and we value who they are. So it's about value.
Okay, I think that's amazing. I think just sitting here thinking about it is like, well, we're all going to get old someday. And well, I think that you're doing a great job thinking about this and, you know, working on this tech to help the elderly, which we're all going to be someday. But my question is, isn't hardware in the healthcare industry more of a big player's game because it's so capital intensive? I understand that it's going to require, you know, possibly millions and millions of dollars to get this thing to market and to scale it and to scale up. You know, why tackle a problem like this from a startup perspective when, you know, it's so capital intensive and knowing that you're going to have to raise venture capital and track record isn't the greatest for Black founders?
Yeah, I definitely, sometimes it keeps me up at night thinking about that because, yeah, I'm battling with kind of these large players that have, you know, the funding, but I'm not afraid to do it. It has to be done. You know, there are a lot, the space is pretty crowded, especially with fall detection. I mean, from the wearables all the way to the more passive technology, like what I'm doing. But with my customer discovery, I'm really starting to carve out what it is that I'll be doing differently and what will set me apart. But overall, I am building the Sistine Chapel on a shoestring budget. That's kind of how I think about it. But it's just those little movements. You know, yeah, it's going to take me longer. It has already taken me 4 years to get where I am. But I'm not afraid to do it. I just know that it is what I'm supposed to do with just the past experiences that I've had. And I've already been in IT consulting before and have done some pretty extensive projects. So it's as a system architect, as someone who does this pretty much on a day-to-day basis, I knew that if anybody can do it, it can be me. And it just has to be. It's going to be necessary. And yeah, it's definitely hard. And sometimes I feel, you know, especially not only as a minority founder, but as a female founder, because females in technology were very rare, anyhow. But it's, you know, I'm just not afraid to do it. And I'm also understanding the need for forging those initial partnerships with some of those larger organizations. I've done a lot of, you know, talking to people, bringing them in, getting them really interested in what I'm doing and getting them to believe in me as an individual, because that's really what it's going to take. But I have to prove myself more than other startups and other founders, just because, as you said, it's, you know, I'm going into something that the big dogs have been to. But that's what sets you apart too, is being brave and taking that chance.
So I think the first thing that comes to mind when you say that is, I mean, do you have any new patents on this technology? Have you invented, you know, some new technology that is able to detect, you know, falls better than what's out there right now?
That's currently what I'm working on. I don't have any patents because, as I said, I'm using available technology and the sensor that I'm using is already patented. So I can't patent the hardware. What I can patent is my algorithm and my overall system. And that's what I've been really working to refine a bit more than where I currently am. So it's going to be a long journey. And I've already done some initial patent searches and see there's some similar patents that have already been filed. But working with Arrowhead has been fantastic because I have access to patent attorneys and advice as to how to proceed. So they've been very, very helpful in that arena.
Okay, so bootstrapping for 4 years, that's kind of no joke. How did you get the funding to start off with? I mean, did you have to tap into personal savings? I know a lot of founders eventually have to go into, you know, I've heard of people, you know, borrowing against their 401k. I've heard people, you know, about people cracking new credit cards. I've heard people, you know, borrowing from friends and family. You know, how do you get started with something like this? If someone else is out there right now who is a daredevil enough like you to get into hardware, you know, how do you even get started financially?
Primarily, I've just been using my salary to fund it. So I work full time. And I work in IT and I get paid pretty well. So since I can keep my costs low because I live in New Mexico where the cost of living is pretty affordable, I've been able to just take basically what I've had for savings and put it all into my company. You know, I've cut down a lot on like, you know, basic living, like food and, you know, trying to really budget myself. But that's primarily what I've used as my funding source. I've had a few grants that have been provided to me, post-accelerator programs. And as I said, right now I'm applying for an NSF grant because then I can conduct additional research and be able to fund myself even more. So there are programs out there, including I was working with the laboratories. We have a lot of federal government labs here in the state of New Mexico, and there's a program that where I was able to have laboratory assistance, basically. So I didn't receive actual funding, but I received a lot of research and like a white paper as the end result. So I had a lot of help in that respect, you know, through just kind of these grants, and then just bootstrapping with my own salary.
Well, that's extremely brave, and I know a lot of Black founders or founders in general might just relate to that story all too well. But another sort of popular or common thing that I hear a lot is you have founders who are still working full time. I'm the same. I still work full time. I have a full time job. And you know, how do you manage that time? I'm sure you have family commitments. You might have a partner. You might have kids. How are you putting all that time together? You know, and then have time for your startup, which again, you're in hardware, you're doing this incredibly hard thing. How are you managing that time? I mean, you're not creating new time. How do you stick all that in 24 hours?
So it's about 8 hours of work. I make sure I focus on my health. That is like my number one thing. So I like to do powerlifting and going to the gym. That's like kind of my fun. And then when I come home, I don't have any children. I have a dog, and he's very easy to take care of. He just needs love. And I just make dinner, and then after dinner, I just get to work. I go into my little, I call it the laboratory, and I just, you know, work until I know I need to go to bed, and then I get up and I do it all again. Luckily, Saturdays and Sundays, I don't have to work, so primarily I just stay up as late as I can, get up as early as I can, and I just work. So I'm constantly working. My family calls me a workaholic, but they know that I'm doing good things, and they're very supportive in that. But you know, it's in a way, you know, I don't have the family. I don't have like a husband or kids. I think it would be very difficult to do this if I did have children and a husband. But you know, just as a single woman, I'm able to utilize my time well.
Okay. That does sound like you know, there's a lot of spare time there to work on something this hard. But you're not alone. You do have some help. So as a bootstrapper, I think I was very impressed to see that you actually have a team of six people that have joined you. You have a COO, you've got a CFO, you've got a CIO. And you have medical advisors as well, clinical advisors. You know, how are you able to convince all these people to come work with you when they're not getting paid? I mean, how do you do that? Tell me. I want to know. I've been trying to convince people to work with me on Gritly, and it's literally the hardest thing to do. And I don't have one person right now as a, you know, as a co-founder or a CFO or anything like that. And you have five. So can you please just tell me what you say to these people to work with you?
I know. And, you know, sometimes the worst part, none of them have equity yet.
Like, and I haven't, don't have equity.
No, well, they not, don't. I know.
Now you really have to let me know what you're saying.
I need to work on that. No, I can only say that I am very blessed. And it started primarily with Dr. Alozi, one of my medical advisors. You know, when I reached out to him, I told him, I was like, he considers himself, he calls himself the data doc. So he's really into informatics and data analytics as a means to provide better care. So I told him, you know, I am a staunch, I like the best data. That's what I do for my day to day. is to ensure that I have good data to make better decisions. And so just getting out and talking to some of these key players, they've gotten to know my personality. They've gotten to understand that I'm very committed to doing this right. And I just don't want to put anything out there. So I keep up with everybody. I do monthly status reports. So I let everybody know where I'm at, what I've been doing, deliverables I have, what I need, any key resources. And I like to keep them all in the loop. You know, I'll check in. But it was just kind of that initial, like, establishing those relationships, you know, that some I've had for a while. But just them seeing, I think, overall, that how committed I am to this cause, I think is what really, you know, people, it really gets people motivated to work with me. And, you know, they're not working for me. And I always tell them that too. I'm like, you're not working for me, you're working with me. They're as valuable to me as you know, any of the ideas that I may have. I mean, I can't get any of them off the ground without all the people who are there to support me. And they all know that eventually, once I get to the point where, you know, I reorganize the company, everybody will be provided with equity. So right now, I mean, it's like a lot of sweat, a lot of work. But primarily, I kind of consider myself a one-woman army until, you know, I'll call Zach up. Zach has been awesome as a celebrator and writing the grant, but he's a busy man too. So, you know, I try to just do as much as I can on my own until I know that I've got to delegate some work to other people. But primarily, you know, I'm like, it's all me making sure that I can get this done and that I can do it right. So,
do you ever have a problem with letting go of some of the responsibility? I know, like, mm-hmm. as a primarily solo founder who has 5 people working with her, you know, do you ever have trouble with trusting people with some of the important stuff that you have to do, or is that something that comes naturally?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the hardest thing, because I want it done right and I want it done my way. So, I, you know, that megalomaniac in me kind of comes out, and I need to delegate more. But I just feel it in this founding time. It's, you know, I need to figure out what to delegate to people. I mean, because overall, you know, I'd love to have someone who can really help me with getting the brand and, like, logo design. I mean, I have some initial stuff, but really start branding it and start getting it out there on social media and really, you know, getting that traction. And I know I need to do that. I just, you know, I think it's like I'm trying to looking at it at steps, like in a project. And I'm like, during this initiation phase, I'm just, you know, I know it needs to be done and I know that I can get it done. And when I need advisors or additional help, I can reach out to Arrowhead and talk to advisors. So, I mean, you know, there's more people supporting me than my core team. I've got a university behind me that I have full access to across the board. So when I need assistance and doing like IP searches, they stepped up to the plate and they did a lot of that work. So it is difficult to delegate because I'm not very good at that, but I know when I need somebody, I just need to ask. And I think that's kind of hard to do sometimes. Makes me feel bad.
Well, I mean, the one thing that you mentioned there, which, by the way, you still haven't told us what you say to these people yet to get them to work for you, but I'll let that pass. is the importance of relationships. I know in the startup world, I was, I'm not going to say very surprised, but I was very, I would say surprised actually at how powerful, you know, leveraging good relationships can get you. You know, it's definitely obviously about, you know, your technology and what you're working on and the importance of that and the business case and all this sort of stuff. But it's really a relationship-driven sort of industry. Mm-hmm. That being said, you know, what is the startup ecosystem, right? Like in New Mexico. I mean, I've never heard about, you know, the startup ecosystem that comes out of there. You know, do you have you know, a good ecosystem? Do you have a lot of investors, accelerators? Are there big companies working out there? You know, what is it like?
Well, it's growing, I think. There's a lot of accelerator programs that are tied to like community colleges and larger institutions. And there's just a lot of support because primarily where everybody works for the federal government, pretty much in New Mexico. If you're making good money, you're either state or federal government. So this is highly, I don't want to say militarized, but there's just a lot of spending in the areas of defense and Department of Energy. So there's a lot of engineers, let me just put it that way. So I think, you know, they're really starting to recognize there's a need for it. And the program that I went through was fantastic down at New Mexico State, which is not in Albuquerque where I live, but I had to travel a few hours to participate in the program. But they're very, you know, there's a lot of outreach going on. There's a lot of evolutionary change going on down here. Since we're primarily a border, we're a border community, there's a lot of impoverished individuals. We have a lot of rural areas. I thought to myself, this is a great place to launch what it is I'm doing because I need to ensure that it's affordable. I need to ensure that there's connectivity for, you know, our rural users. So, I mean, there's a lot of challenges here. And I think that there is a larger movement, you know, to kind of move away from, you know, these coastal projects of, you know, the Silicon Valley. There's a lot of movement in New York City. I know there's a lot of movement going on down where you are in Miami as well. But, you know, that's, you know, where the people have the money and there's where the people, there's higher populations. But considering, you know, how small of a population we have, I think that there's a lot of desire and there's a lot of outreach going on and development of an entrepreneurial landscape and for Native communities, so for the Native Americans, all the way to our minority and Hispanic communities. So there's just been a lot of outreach and there's a lot of support for us. So of course, we're not on the map yet, but we will be. You know, there's been a few larger companies that have come up out of here. I don't know if you're aware of one. It's called POS Lavu, and it is a restaurant or a menu ordering system that used the iPad and iPhone technology. So that came out of here, and that was a pretty well known. They were on Hell's Kitchen and things like that. So there's a few of us, you know, that will be the innovators that come out of the state, but. There's a lot of up and coming talent that is pretty untapped and unknown right now.
So it sounds like if someone's looking for a new location to launch a hard tech company, New Mexico should be on the map. So you heard it here. So it's sounds like there's a lot of talent over there as well from the, you know, the surplus of engineers as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of talent and it's cheap to live. So if you make a good enough wage, you can definitely, it's easy to bootstrap. I couldn't do what I'm doing if I lived in New York City. You know, there's just no way.
This is terrible. Like, no one would do that. Everyone in New York needs to move.
that's where my parents are from. They're both from New York City.
Poor thing. No, I actually love New York a lot.
Yeah, me too, actually.
So being an entrepreneur now, is it something that, you know, you've always done? Are you the cookie bake lady back in preschool, or are you, you know, are you the brownie girl hawking brownies in front of Walmart? is this something that you've always kind of done, or is it something that you kind of just fell into via this technology that you're working on in this hardware company?
I've always been the entrepreneur, similar to my grandfather. So when I was young, I used to do people's homework. I used to tutor. I did a lot of side gigs. And it was always, you know, that drive was always in me. And then I started an IT consulting firm back in 2008. And I had I've had a few employees throughout my time, depending upon the project. We get state government contracts, and I would build websites and do project management. So that was primarily where I really started cutting my teeth into technology. So once I did that, you know, I've always been someone who wanted to work for myself. And then when I wound my company, I pretty much wound it down. Once we there was some politics going on in the state that I didn't want to be a part of. So I started kind of looking to become more of an IT consultant and involved. And went back to school, and then that's where I designed Care Companion when I was getting my master's in computer information systems. So I kind of put it on the back burner for a bit. I just worked, you know, and did some contracts. But then one day I was, you know, I thought to myself, my professor told me, he urged me to, he was like, you really need to make this system. You really need to, you know, keep it in mind. Don't always just put it on the back burner. And then around like 2014, I started to kind of think, hey, maybe I should make my own product that I sell myself instead of being a reseller of Microsoft products and, you know, being a contractor and a consultant. I really wanted to get into the industry. And so I started, you know, basically ramping up Optimus at that time.
So it sounds like this is something that's always been, you know, burning in your mind in some way, and you just have to get it done now because it's been embedded in your mind, and you know you have the motivation right now for sure. But is it possible to bootstrap something like this to success? You know, raising venture capital is not easy. You could potentially also raise from universities because you know it sounds like you're tapped into that ecosystem as well. But let's say hypothetically you don't raise venture capital. Is it possible to bootstrap a hardware company like what you're doing to success, to profitability in some way?
I think so. You know, you have to be creative. You have to look at things, you know, not as, okay, I need, you know, $4 million to get to this point. So I break it into smaller chunks. And then if I can even, you know, get my price lower, then I do that. I work with an engineering company who's been doing the bulk of my development, the microcontroller. And in order to afford it, I mean, they've been fantastic. They're allowing me to make payments. You know, they have flexibility. So, I mean, you have to be a bit more creative and you have to ask. I think the next step for me is pursuing this National Science Foundation, maybe the National Institutes of Health. There's a lot of grant money that's available to companies like mine to be able to commercialize, to build the research and commercialize our products and services. So that's my next step. You know, I've been working hard in making contacts that I need in order to do that. And I think primarily that's the route that I'm going to be taking. I think the venture capital may happen. I know that, you know, you've got to get someone to lead the round of funding, but I have to get to the point where I'm already piloting the system. I've got people using it in order for them to even my way. So I'm not really counting on that money. I'm not really banking that I'm going to get VC capital funding. I'm kind of looking outside of the realm of, you know, how startups fund themselves, and I'm kind of reconfiguring it for myself. It's going to take me longer. It's going to take more work. But, you know, as I said, I'm not afraid to do it.
You know, so one of the things that is becoming more popular, I believe, in the startup world is the model of bootstrapping to success. Quite a number of companies have been able to do it. It's not impossible. It is hard in most ways. But, you know, what are your goals with this? You know, bootstrap companies primarily, you know, from what I can gather from the industry, or, you know, a couple of guys and ladies for sure, who get together to build something and keep the cost low, very small teams. They have a product, usually software. I don't necessarily hear a lot about hardware companies that bootstrap success, but you know, what are your goals with this one? You know, are you trying to be the next unicorn? Are you hoping to build a company that is self-sustainable at 5-10 people? You know, do you want to grow it to 100 people? Like, what is your actual goal with this with regards to the company itself?
Well, I want to, you know, build an industry. This is basically the first iteration of it, you know, to detect falls and to detect activity levels. But I want to be able to create a medical device, something that is a bit more robust in the remote health monitoring and transitional care services. So when people are discharged from hospitals or nursing care facilities, that they can go into their home and still have the level of care that they need. So I want to take this company a lot further. I don't want to just build this and be bought out. That's definitely not my goal, to just, you know, build and then sell it to Amazon or, you know, Apple. I mean, eventually that might be the case. I want to build this to a larger organization that can focus on not just fall technology, but it could even turn into something that does security and security services, building tech and also employee management. So I want to be at the helm for a bit. You know, I haven't gotten to the point where I want, you know, I'm going to say I want like 400 employees. I just want enough people to be able to run the ship. You know, and for us to do a great job and to offer great systems that meets our customers' needs. So I'd like to stay. You know, I don't want to just create it and then run away from it or sell it. I want to really build it and to have my hands in it for a while.
So you've been at this for somewhat a total of about 4 years now. I'm sure you've done a lot of things correctly, and I'm sure you've done a lot of things incorrectly that you learned from as well. What would you give your 4 year ago self? What would you advise that version of Tierra to do? You know, what would, in hindsight, you know, what would you tell that person, or how would you tell that person to approach what they're about to take on?
I would have told me really early on to have applied for the SBIR grants and the other grant program. There were a few, you know, I think if I had applied a little bit early on, I thought that I needed to be further along in the research than I was at the time. I kind of focused on just building that idea out. So I definitely would have applied a bit sooner. But pretty much, I would have to say I'm pretty happy with what I've done and how far I've come. And overall, it is a short span of time, considering what it is I'm doing. I've got to the point where, you know, I can see me breathing, I can see my heart rate, I can see where I am, and I don't wear anything. I mean, it's amazing when I turn my system on and I see it working. It's just, I know, you know, I've come this far, and though it seemed like much to some, to me, it's been my all, and I'm happy where I'm at. So I really can't say that I would do anything differently, except just focusing on kind of bringing in some initial funding earlier on, instead of depending upon the bootstrap approach.
So you spoke about turning the system on. You know, the one thing that we haven't touched on yet is, obviously we're not going to ask you to give the secrets to your tech here, but if I wanted this system, you know, let's say it's out in the market and I want it for my mother, right, who's also, you know, aging as well, and she's going to need stuff like this in her home to make sure that she's fine. How does it work? You know, you spoke about it not being a wearable. What are we looking at? Are we looking at the, you know, like a massive piece of equipment that comes in to someone's house? You know, is it integrated into the walls? You know, what are we looking at here?
Basically, it's just a box as large as a router. So it's a pretty small device. And I'm trying to keep the number of boxes in the home at a minimum, So they're installed where you would install a router, primarily a little higher up on the wall or in a corner of the room. And the system would interact with a base station. So it's similar to our modern day security, home security devices, where you have your sensors that communicate with the base station that uses cellular or Wi-Fi, depending on the Wi-Fi is available. So in the case of somebody falls in the hallway or bathroom, which is primarily where the falls happen, the system would recognize it. It would see that you have fallen. It would use calculations and my algorithm to determine the severity of the fall. So that would be based on location, duration of the fall, how hard the fall was. And then it would send out different alerts. So if it was somebody, you know, fell out of their chair or fell from their bed, or, you know, kind of had a softer fall, it could call their neighbor who has a key to their home to come and help them up. If it was a severe fall, it would call 911 right away. And then also let any caregivers, such as family members or neighbors, know that a fall has happened and that help is on the way. And then once the help has been established or somebody's been taken to the hospital, it'll also send out notifications just to let everybody know the status of that elder and where they are, which hospital they're going to, and keep people informed of really what's going on in the household. But in addition to just detecting the falls, what it also does is detect for changes in daily activities, things such as eating, how often and frequency that they go into the kitchen, how long they've been in the kitchen, have they taken their medication, are they, you know, just kind of sitting in front of the television all day, so a lack of activity. If they're up at night wandering the house, which is something my father does every night, so I can actually see how long he's wandering, what time he's wandering. So it can help with Alzheimer's patients, so I can tell for dementia, if somebody actually wanders from their house, I'll be able to track that they've left the home. If they go into the bathroom too frequently, how many trips that they've had, are they, you know, bathing, you know, just the slew of things that we don't really think about, because if once there's deviations in that, those types of patterns, we know that there's a need for intervention at whatever level that may be. Or if somebody's not drinking enough water, they're not taking their medication, they could be more prone to fall. Maybe not in the home, but even outside of the home. So I want to take those daily activities and intervene before the emergency happens, before the fall could even happen. I want my system to be smart enough to know when there's a time to intervene and who needs to be told of that intervention. And it's done without any sort of wearables. All we have to do initially is just plug it in, set where the location is, and let the system do the rest. They don't have to have it synced up to a cell phone or anything like that. I'm just trying to make it as easy as possible.
The first thing that comes to mind is that is something that I would definitely want for a lot of my elderly family members. However, are people okay with giving up that much data about themselves? I mean, that sounds like a lot of tracking. I think as a company, you're going to have a lot of responsibility with regards to keeping that data safe. From the conversations you've had, you know, initial users and potentially users that you've spoken to, are people okay with that amount of information being collected about their lives? I know that, you know, people found out about, you know, Amazon Echoes and the Alexas recording when they were not supposed to, and everybody freaked out. And it sounds like this thing is just going to know everything about you, you know. Are people okay with that?
No, people are not okay with that. And this is what I'm doing to confront that issue. So with the data, I'm HIPAA certified, so I understand how healthcare data needs to be collected and stored and encrypted. But I'm taking it a bit further than that. I'm going to put all of their data on a medical blockchain. So basically, they're going to own their data. I'm not going to own it. I'm not going to be like Facebook or somebody else where I harvest your data and sell it to, you know, all these outside companies so that they can market to you or whatever. I want them to have ownership of their information and to be able to put it onto like a medical wallet. So I've been looking into how I can integrate blockchain technology so that I can protect, you know, the people whose data that I currently house. I mean, but I, as a company, Omnibus has no desire to hold that data or to sell that data. We want to protect that. So that's primarily the way that we're going to protect that data and ensure that they can take that information and give it to their doctor. You know, it can go anywhere with them, and they'll be the owners of it. If they want to sell their data, they can. I've thought about that as a possible revenue stream, to be kind of an intermediary to help seniors who want to sell their data to, you know, medical device manufacturers or to a hospital. You know, I thought that, you know, that is the only way of doing it. But I'm just thinking about this ethically. I shouldn't be the one who owns that data and makes money off of it. Just, it's wrong. And it's a big concern for us all, and it should be. So I'm trying to take the higher road in that approach and to ensure that I protect their data and I make sure that they own it themselves.
So, I mean, we've got a mix of things here. We have hardware, you working with manufacturers and PCB designers to get all that done. You've got, mm-hmm. you know, working on a proprietary algorithm to do all these calculations using a bunch of different sensors. Now we've got blockchain in the mix. You know, how are you staying up to date with all these different technologies? I mean, I'm sure you have to learn as you go along, or did you just, you know, have all the information, did you have the knowledge prior to this, or are you self-studying as you go along as well?
Yeah, I'm self-studying. I've always been interested in blockchain, and I have done some Bitcoin mining. That was another actual way for me to fund my company. So it's always been cryptocurrency and blockchain management. It's always been something that I have had an interest in. But just when we started having these issues with the protection of private data and who sells the data, who owns it, you know, all of these things that have been in the news, it really started, you know, to get me thinking, because originally I was like, well, it's going to be, you know, housing on my servers. It's, you know, the data that I'm collecting, but I'm getting that data over to it. But I, you know, I was like, but I just, you know, I can encrypt it until the cows come home, but I need to protect that data further. And I need, you know, to ensure that they own it themselves. So, you know, I was like, that's a big problem, you know, and then blockchain, I'm like, that actually solves that entire problem. So I stay current on the industry of blockchain technology. There's a few medical blockchain companies and startups that I've looked into that primarily I will likely reach out to them and kind of have more of partnerships so that I'm not having to really come up with the blockchain infrastructure that I need. I would rather work find a partner that could really help me in doing more of that research. But, you know, I still have to stay informed about the technology and where it's headed. But I definitely think bringing somebody in and working and developing partnerships is going to be highly valuable when I get to the point where I'm collecting data.
Is there a timeline to all this? I mean, do you, as a bootstrapper, you know, I think that, you know, just from my understanding of what you're doing, I think you're tethering the line between researcher and entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. You know, researchers can go on forever. They can just, you know, continue the research, and then finally when it's ready for commercial application, they'll just deliver it then. Mm-hmm. But do you have a timeline to this? Do you say, okay, well, you know, most startups would say, okay, we're launching in 6 months and we're going to just, you know, drive this thing as fast as possible to get that V1 out there. Do you have a timeline like that? Or, it, you know, when it happens, and then you take it off from there. Because technology moves fast, you know. I think that to think that you're the only one working on this, you know, would be something that history has taught us that is not true. You know, so is, are you in a rush? You know, like, what's your deadline here?
Yeah, I'm always in a rush. Yeah, I do have timelines. So I expect, so there's a lot of dependencies in regards to my timeline, because the sensors that I'm working with are currently in beta. So that's, if the I'm working with Texas Instruments. So thank God I'm working with a larger partner, but I'm dependent upon their timeline to be able to actually sell this sensor to consumers, because they're the ones who are doing all of that legwork, thankfully. So we expect to have our beta test pilot launched in the second quarter of 2020. And then we want to launch commercially the fourth quarter of 2020. So it's ambitious, but I know based on current resources that I have available and where I stand that it's more than feasible. So we 2020 is our target date to launch the system.
So when can I get one?
Fourth quarter 2020.
Fourth quarter 2020. Okay, so fourth quarter 2020, I'm going to hit you up. I'm going to say, hey, Tara, you know, I need this technology for whatever application that, you know, which actually gets me thinking, you know, when everything I hear you say about, you know, what you're working on, I see, you know, 20 other applications of where it can be deployed. So potentially you could be in a situation where, you know, you are faced with the opportunity to actually license the technology out and not pursue, you know, this technology for seniors. Are you saying that's something that you'd be open to?
Yes. You know, I've had a few, there are other potential customers that could use the system. You know, someone who's had surgery and, you know, they may not be a senior, but they live alone, you know, post discharge, or, you know, someone who has seizures. That's often something I've been wanting to test. I can see seizures. And I think, yeah, I mean, it's still, you know, on the drawing board, but, you know, epilepsy, that can affect anybody at any age, not just someone who's an elder. You know, it could be used for security in a hotel, you know, for instance, you know, to monitor where employees are and people who should be there, because they can see how many people are in a room and how they're standing, sitting, you know, where they've gone. So, I mean, it can go in different directions. It doesn't just have to focus on seniors. And I am receptive to doing that. But I haven't put that into my actual launch timeline to maybe look into other areas we can launch what we currently have. But we could.
So how much is this going to cost? sounds like a lot of good advantages of having one of these, or a couple of them, depending on if you want to sell them in a few rooms. You know, how much is this going to set me back? Or am I not the customer? Is my insurance company going to be paying for something like this? You know, who are you selling this stuff to?
Right. That's actually been what we're working on, because originally I was like, okay, well, I think I want to focus on family caregivers who want to purchase this for their mother or father so that they can stay in their home. But I'm starting to rethink this. There's a lot of PMS billing codes that I can utilize for telehealth, where I could actually have Medicare or Medicaid cover these types of costs. And then also insurance companies to incentivize or bring premiums down if they utilize our system, because it's, you know, taking more of a proactive approach to health management. So I've been looking into that within the past 6 weeks, really kind of pushing it out more. But as it currently stands, the pricing point that I want to keep it at is $39.99 a month to do monitoring, and I'm trying to keep the system itself down to about $500.
Okay, so my insurance company is going to be paying for that for sure.
Right. Well, I mean, and you know, I'm as I said, I'm trying to price it, you know, for people here in New Mexico, West Texas, who have a lot of seniors that are on extremely fixed budgets, you know, and a lot of people who are in poverty, and especially a lot of impoverished elders. So I want to make it, you know, affordable overall, you know, because I mean, things like Life Alert, the cost of a PERS unit is $29.99 a month. cost of the business itself. So I'm trying to stay within those, within that pricing point. But you're right. You know, I think looking outside of the seniors or the family, if I can get insurance to cover it, I think, you know, that would definitely be very valuable.
I think I speak for all the consumers and the future consumers saying, I think that you should focus on that and actually get the insurance companies to do it, because that'd be great. Mm-hmm. Another thing I would probably say is, it's a more technical question, is are there any integrations that you plan? You know, is this thing going to be able to talk to, you know, Siri? Is it going to be able to talk to Alexa? You know, are you planning on doing something like that? Are you going to platform this thing where someone can develop sort of apps on top of it as well that can pair and integrate with all these existing technologies out there?
Yeah, that's my overall goal. And not only, I mean, the voice first technology that's coming out, I'm trying to keep privacy in mind. Smart speakers, while I think that would be highly valuable for care of elders and ensuring, you know, that people aren't isolated. I would like to bring that in, but primarily what I want to interact with are things like weight scales, glucose monitors, blood pressure cuffs, you know, the things that people take their vitals at home as well. And there's a lot of these types of medical devices that will send the information back to your caregivers, back to your doctor or nurse. So I really, first phase would be to ensure that I can interact with those types of smart devices, including smart devices, because I can tell where right now that can be very important in medication and care. And there's a lot of smart pills that I think you could really easily interact with the system that it is on the lining. So yes, it is something that I've been thinking about, and how I can, you know, ensure that I have a richer feature set by utilizing other IoT devices that can be brought into the mix.
That's very interesting. And I think that, you know, how you navigate that space would definitely be something to follow. So just for clarification on with regards to, you know, your fundraising aspects of things, you know, I know that what's very common and what's very well known in the startup industry now is how difficult it is for, you know, black founders to raise money. And mm-hmm. just, you know, have you not just on the, you know, fundraising side of things, but just in general, have you experienced any sort of discrimination with regards to, you know, your abilities when doing something like this? Because this is something very highly technical. When you look at a lot of the hardware startups out there, they're not a lot of female led and female founders doing that. You know, mm-hmm. is this something that you've ever experienced? Can you speak on that?
Overall, I haven't directly had any discriminatory type experiences, just because New Mexico, we're already a really diverse state. So, you know, I think all of us, you know, there's a lot of minorities here that, you know, and in the startup ecosphere that are doing great things. And I think we have a lot of support. I haven't traveled to Silicon Valley to talk to any of those investors, where I think I would probably hit more of a brick wall, I suspect. And I was told once, but it was kind of a joke, that I needed a white beard, and that made me laugh, because they were like, well, you'd probably be able to raise money easier if you had a white guy who could just talk to people. But I mean, we were, you know, when she said it, you know, I was like, okay, well, I mean, there could be some validity to that, because she traveled around a lot. And it's really a prominent mover in the startup ecosphere. So I mean, she knows, but she just said that to me. She was like, you know, you probably do that in order to raise the money that you need. But I haven't directly had that experience. But what I do feel is that I kind of have to prove myself more. If I, you know, was a white man who had this startup, I bet I could probably have raised a bit. You know, I could probably raise more. It's kind of less barrier of entry. But I mean, just being in IT as a Black woman is difficult in and of itself. So I think maybe I have a stand that I don't think about it anymore. Because I know my stuff and I know what I'm doing. And, you know, that's what it's really about. It doesn't matter what color I am or what sex I am. I can do the job. So, yeah. That's how I feel about it.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of confidence there, and I would probably say that you don't need a white beard. Perfectly fine as a Black founder who's educated, technical, and driven. I don't think you need a white beard for anything.
No.
But you know, you are very technical. But startups are much more than that. You know, it requires branding. It requires, you know, customer discovery experience. You know, you've got PR, you've got press stuff, you've got marketing, and eventually you will have people to do this for you. But are you going to, as a solo founder primarily, who has five other people working for you in different capacities, but are you going to wear all those hats as well, or are you going to be looking for other people to do that?
Oh, I'm definitely going to need, you know, kind of, I was just saying, I need like a communications director or marketing, sales. I put those as people into my projections, people that I need with salaries. So when I'm at that point and ready for that, then, and I think that's going to be really kind of the pressing point where I'm like, okay, I need to start this branding. I'm really ready to start, you know, marketing, sales, getting the traction I need. And I'm looking for people. And at this current moment, I definitely don't have the money to pay salaries to these people. So I would need to, you know, go to an angel investor or go get a small loan, or, you know, I will have to figure that out. But I think, you know, when I'm at the point of ready, that's really probably when, you know, a lot of things are going to change, because I can't do all that on my own, and I'm not well versed in all of it. So I definitely need the help. I thought about outsourcing some of it, because there are a lot of startups, and there's a lot of small businesses out there that, you know, I could pay to, you know, start all this marketing campaign, the branding, but that's still going to take some money, and, you know, versus hiring someone as a salaried employee, you know, to come and do that. So I've been weighing the pros and cons about that, but primarily I keep going back to the fact that I really would prefer to have people working with me on salary to really, you know, seeing the product, seeing, you know, everything, how we progress development wise to really get their head in the game too. So versus, you know, outsourcing it to an external company.
So two things here. First thing is, I know you have a number in mind. You know, how much money do you want to raise? If I'm a VC right now and I said, okay, here's a blank check, how much do you need?
As of today, to get this to point of piloting, I would say probably a million, like 1.2 million is my current projection. And that's to hire the people that I need to start the traction and to get this ready for commercial distribution.
So that $1 million, would that take you to profitability or just at the point of getting the product out there into users' hands?
That's getting the product into the users' hands.
And how big is the industry? You know, what market are you going after here? Are we talking about a $5 million, $5 billion industry? You talk about a $100 billion industry. You know, what's the upside here? You know, let's say Ominous Technologies becomes the market king or queen. You know, what's the market cap here?
Right. Well, see, that's an interesting question because it's complicated to answer. So there's the personal emergency response system, such as Life Alert. That current market is valued at $6.5 billion globally. But the market penetration is only 6%. only 6% of seniors are using those systems. So, you know, we've got some room to wiggle here. And then understanding the projections, by 2025, they project that the medical alert system market will be valued at $23.2 billion. And that's in a very short span of time, because there's going to be an, I think that on that the barrier of entry when it comes to these traditional persons, which is why seniors aren't adopting it. So we have to level that playing field and get seniors to really utilizing the systems more. I think we will once we have far too many to care for and not enough family members or medical caregivers to meet their needs. So I feel like we're going to be forced to make this movement, which is why the valuation is going to increase. It'll double pretty much every year once the baby boomers start retiring. So I think that's going to be the biggest hurdle, not only for me, but anyone who goes into the medical industry. Now, if I, you know, stay in the medical systems market, you know, I hope to penetrate between 5 to 7% of the elder population here in the Southwest region. So, I mean, it's a lofty goal, but in 2 years, our profits will range anywhere from 10 to 12 million in revenues, which is, it's pretty good. So just, you know, there's a lot of room. You just have to get the people who, you know, adopting that system and really moving away from that stigma of I fall in and I can't get up.
Are you potentially looking at doing a crowdfunding campaign?
Yeah, I've thought about that, and that's in order to do that, I think that I really need to start doing more of that marketing and branding and you know, getting some of these sales, the ad man, you know, I need this communication director to come in a little sooner. And since I don't think I can do one of those, I don't think I can really do like a crowdfunding service with my capabilities as someone who I'm terrible at taking pictures, things like that. So I would need people in order to do a successful crowdfunding. Or a company that can help me. I've thought about a few. There's one that's focused on medical technology. I've thought about doing that one. But I haven't really, I've thought about it, but I haven't really gone down that road as a possibility.
Well, if you ever do, I think that myself and all the other founders on the Gritly platform would happily invest in a company like that. I know I would, because I think that the technology is very interesting. I think that there's a lot of promise. I think that you have multiple industries that you can definitely tap into, you know, mm-hmm. logistics, shipping, handling. I mean, mm-hmm. there's just so much you can do with that. Mm-hmm. So I'm definitely excited to see where this goes. And I think that if anybody else is excited, can you just tell people where they can reach you, you know, your social handles, your website? You know, how can they learn more about your technology and how can they contact you?
Sure. So I have a profile on Gus that I will provide to everybody. Basically, it's just gus.com/OmniusTech. And then we just recently launched our website and it's carecompanion.tech. So I'm online. You can also search for me on LinkedIn. My first name is Tiara, last name Grant. And I'm from New Mexico. So I'm available to anyone who's really interested in learning more about the technology, or, you know, if anyone's interested in helping me to devise a strategy for a crowdfunding, or somebody who does video production, things like that, you know, I definitely would love for them to reach out to me, because I think that would actually be a great resource to have, and I'm very interested in it. So.
That's fantastic. You know, this has been great. And you can also reach Tiara by her Gritly profile as well. I'll just drop that in there. Yep. You know, you can check out gritly.co, reach out to her on that platform as well. So this has been amazing. Thank you very much. You know, definitely looking out for seeing your product on the market. Fourth quarter 2020, I've written that down already so I can buy one of the things and get my insurance company to pay for it. And I guess, you know, thank you very much. And, you know, we'll probably do a catch up when you launch next year sometime. We'll have you on again. And you can tell us all about the journey, about how you raised money and how you got everything done. And, you know, the challenges and the wins over the next, you know, year or so.
All right. Well, I definitely can't wait. So, you know, we're going to keep trucking. So failure is not an option. All right.
Failure is not an option. So, thank you. And, you know, have a good day.
You too. Thank you, Adrian. It's been fantastic.
All right. Okay. Bye-bye. Bye.